episode 117 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded January 26, 2017. Hulu Scoop. What a week, guys. What a week it has been.
For TV.
We always have to say for TV because the rest of the world, we have to shut it out.
Randy, that's already getting me through 2017. The amount of times I've already done things and like, oh, this is going to be a great year. For TV.
Yeah,
for television.
Just, we're here. We're the TV dudes. It's TV.
Yes. This is your escape from the rest of reality.
There will be little sprinkles of the orange one. I can't help it. I'm sorry. But I will try to keep it to dumb jokes.
The orange one?
The orange one.
You can't shake those sprinkles off before we start, Randy.
Yeah, get that out of here. Come on. All right. We are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And we're talking about Hulu this week. We're talking all about Hulu. In fact, we're going to be discussing three shows, The Path, which is that Aaron Paul, Hugh Dancy,
Michelle Moynihan?
Theological Michelle Moynihan.
Yeah. It's about a cult.
It's about a cult. We're going to talk about that show. We're talking about Shut Eye, which is that Burn Notice dude and psychics.
And con men.
And we're talking about a new show that House is doing called Chance. He just likes one-word shows, I guess.
No, because he was in The Night Manager. It had three words and multiple syllables.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for ruining it.
I ruined it.
But now he's Dr. Noun again.
Yeah. So. But, yeah, Chance is not what I thought it was when I first tried to watch it.
Not at all.
I don't know if I should have taken a chance on Chance. We'll get to it. All right. Before we get to all that, though, a couple ways you guys can help us out. If you go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, not 4, not 3, not 2, not 1, 5. 5 whole stars, and then you write a little review. We'll read it here on the show. It's a great, free, easy way to help support us, give us more visibility. We like reading the stuff, hear what you guys think about the show. Another way you guys can help us out is over at patreon.com/TVDudes. There you can make a per-episode pledge, and in exchange you get bonus exclusive content. What is that? If you guys go to your Patreon account, log in, you'll see that we upload once a week a new exclusive little podcast, about 30 minutes, about any sort of topic that doesn't necessarily fall under the umbrella of television discussion.
And we've been doing that for a while. There's a lot of backlog content for people now if they get in that.
Yeah, we're about up to 50. So yeah, that's about 25 hours of content.
Yeah.
Roughly so.
And we have new patrons this week.
We do. We have Rebecca and Kip Turner to thank. Welcome, guys.
Yeah. And Grant, again, you're forgetting a third way.
Oh, what is this third way, Randy?
Well, in honor of the Chinese New Year, the year of the rooster, you can dragon dance for us. Make a dragon. The face can look like me or Grant or Les or Kyle or Ashley or some five-headed beast of all of them. Just dragon dance down your street.
Make a video, I guess, and send it to us?
Sure.
Yeah. Or you can do it in your own spare time. Whatever you guys want to do.
You know, people should dragon dance like no one is watching.
I really hope that someone's taking notes.
This is the first one of these that I really, really want to see now. Like the skywriting, eh. The dragon dance, though, someone do this, please.
It'd be pretty impressive, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to move on, though. If you guys like us on Facebook and on Twitter, once a week we post some questions, primarily on Facebook. Like us on Facebook. Make a Facebook account if you don't have one.
Yeah, how hard is it to go to Facebook?
Yeah. We got a bunch of good questions here this week. First one we're going to go to comes to us from Nick Thies, who says, "Hey, dudes, I am watching The West Wing for the first time, and I'm really enjoying it, but I feel like it may have lost something in the current political climate," which is interesting. "I'm not sure what it is, but the president hiding his MS just doesn't seem to be that big of a conflict for some reason. Do you guys feel like older political shows will lose a bit of their luster or relevancy in the next few years? Or will we still be able to shower ourselves in their golden examples of political discourse?"
I salute you,
hashtag
sir.
Hashtag alternative golden showers.
I salute you. That was fantastic. Here's the thing you got to remember. If Hillary Clinton was hiding MS, people would have gone apeshit. Mm-hmm. The reason that it's a big deal for Bartlett is because he's a Democrat and they're held to a different standard. That might just be how I view things, but I believe that
a normal Republican could have been too.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, he's not wrong. The other thing to remember is the West Wing came on when Bill Clinton was president, and things seemed to be going pretty much okay. I mean, sure, there were blowjobs in the White House, but otherwise, things were going pretty okay. And so they sort of started from the politics are sane, but they don't accomplish anything. It's too centrist, all that kind of thing. And went, well, what if it was aspirational? What if everyone there was Mr. Smith goes to Washington? So they're already like way, way off to the left of reality.
Yeah.
And then about midway through, George W. Bush became president. And I remember it was a big shift for my viewing of, oh, now this is my escape.
Yeah, I remember the 9/11 episode with Toby explaining all of it. Yeah.
I encourage you to view West Wing as an escape from political reality in the same way that Sorkin's Newsroom was an escape from the reality of journalism in the modern day, or Studio 60 was an escape from, good
Matthew
television,
Perry was
I guess.
Doing at the time. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it reminds me of House of Cards last season because that came out and we were watching it while we were able to watch everything that was going on with this, the political run up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, wow. Step up your game show, because this is absurd. Everything that's happening in reality is 10 times more absurd than you guys trying to be over the top.
I feel like this is happening a lot in television lately. When Person of Interest went to Comic-Con and their badges just spelled out, told ya. Because their entire previous season had been about a massive warrantless wiretap program or had involved that, and then the NSA stuff came out that year, and the show writers went, oh man, we thought we were ahead of the curve on this and we're not, we're behind.
That people have always said truth is stranger than fiction, but it's really stranger than fiction now.
Yeah, but if people watched, I mean, Grant's got a point, if people watched House of Cards and thought like, well, that's a grimdark West Wing, like no, you still didn't hit gritty reality. You're still empiring this up a little bit.
Michael Gassini asks us, after hearing last week's revelation that Grant and Kyle liked Smallville, I loved it too, are there any shows you dudes used to like that the majority of people would consider uncool? In other words, the Nickelback of TV shows.
I have a huge fondness for Babylon 5, which I'm sure some people find cheesy.
Oh, gross.
I'm trying to think what else.
Loser.
I love Chuck. I don't know if Chuck holds up for people.
I didn't really feel one way or the other about it.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a matter of holding up. Like, I've got shows I watch that I know are just have to be embarrassments. Like, if they're tallying things on The Good Place, like, these shows are going to count against me. But it's not that they don't hold up. It's like, Best Friends Whenever is probably not a great show from the start, but I've seen both seasons.
I mean, I always think about the reality shows I am addicted to. Project Runway, I can't get enough of, and it's just super trashy. I know it. Top Chef seems to be a little bit higher tier, but there's still, you know, corniness of it being a reality TV show.
I also have fondness for Friends and Mad About You, old school must-see TV.
Yeah, and like News Radio you seem to really like.
Love News Radio.
I had the hardest time with old sitcoms. I think Third Rock from the Sun did not hold up as well as I wanted it to.
Oh, I know.
There's just something about old laugh track sitcom that the pacing of the jokes, it's not just the content of where like a whole episode is about some character not wanting to seem gay or something, where I'm like, it just doesn't work as a plot now.
Yeah.
But also just the pacing of the jokes is a little weird.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like trying to go back and watch Honeymooners or I Love Lucy or something and going, wow, this is just not edited together at the speed I'm used to.
But by the way, Real Rob is the Nickelback of TV.
Fair enough. Is that your show? Is that the one you secretly love?
Yeah, well, I'm still working on my podcast, Talking Real Rob.
Ross Brown asks us, hey dudes, are there any dramatic actors that you feel could star in or at least be a supporting role in a comedy series?
Almost all of them, actually. I think most dramatic actors can do. I mean, okay, not the guys on NCIS for the most part. But
if you're a dramatic, I mean, that's how Leslie Nielsen's entire career started, like being the the ultimate straight man.
Yeah,
so you can always put like the stiff next to the ham.
Well, like Timothy Oliphant, who is, you know, very serious in both Justified and Deadwood, is about to be in Santa Clarita Diet.
That guy can be hysterical.
And he looks real, and I've seen him be funny. So he's definitely one.
I mean, I think about like, I don't know why this is the first person that popped up in my head, but I think of like Community or some other shows like that where they've had some serious actors kind of come in and and try and be comedic, and it didn't like fully jive for me.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't necessarily think that Josh Holloway was that hilarious.
No.
In the paintball episode.
That's true.
Nor did I think, what's his name? Omar Little. I can't remember his name.
You know, that's the writing, though. I don't think that's his fault. I think that's not on the actor.
I think there's just certain actors that are really good at being serious, and when you try and play them against type or something, like Michael Emerson from Lost, I don't necessarily want to see him in a comedy because I think he's really good where he is. Anthony Hopkins, I wouldn't want to see in a comedy.
Oh, I want to see Anthony Hopkins in a comedy.
Really?
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
It just feel weird, like About Schmidt or something. I don't want to see Jack Nicholson in a comedy.
Jack Nicholson makes non-comedies. What?
That's true. I don't want to see
like, ones are they? Like I thought all his movies, he's hysterical.
But not intentionally?
No, you're right. Okay, not intentionally.
I don't know.
Oh, but the look on his face in The Frozen when he's got the scowl and... it's hysterical. Go find the still shot of him frozen at the end of that movie. That
I guess
face is
as
awesome.
Good as it gets is pretty funny.
Yeah?
But, I don't know, in a sitcom? Like, in a TV sitcom? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm having a hard time thinking of any dramatic actor I don't want to see in a comedy.
So I'm removing people from the equation rather than suggesting someone.
But I have to see the Nicholson Hopkins Odd Couple revival sitcom.
No, they're buddy cops. They're coming back out of retirement because there's been a hiring freeze, and they need need officers on the street.
It's the TV version of Loose Cannons. They'll just who owns the property for Loose Cannons? the Dan Aykroyd Gene Hackman vehicle.
Yes.
And we'll just make a TV show of that.
Yep. Agreed.
Done.
Carried.
Writes itself.
Dennis McAvoy says, "Have there been any actors you normally can't stand that you've enjoyed in a role? For example, An example would be Pauly Shore in Futurama. Quick question for Grant. Are you watching Akiba's Trip, the animation on Crunchyroll? You know I'm not. And if I was watching any anime, it definitely wouldn't be Akiba's Trip. That was the most offensive game I've played in a long time. It's a game where you just go around sharking women.
Oh, God.
It's fucked up.
I'm so sad.
And of course, there's a show of this.
Yeah, apparently there's a show now. I don't know.
I'm so sad that I know what sharking is.
Yeah.
I'm sad for everything I just learned.
I think that came from 30 Rock, so maybe I'm not so sad about the knowledge.
An actor you can't stand that you enjoyed surprisingly in a role.
Wow. I know there are some. I'm trying to think of
a role where I liked Drew Barrymore in it.
Juliette Lewis was in the first season of Wayward Pines, and I did not need her to die. I think her character still ends up getting hurt because a lot of people in Wayward Pines get hurt.
You don't like Juliette Lewis?
But I friggin' hate Juliette Lewis with the burning passion, and yeah.
Juliette Lewis's cousin in appearance, Liv Tyler, I generally don't like her that much, but she's fantastic in Leftovers. Really good.
She is. She's great in that. I don't know if I have one. I'm weirdly bubbly and positive this week. I've got no hate for dramatic actors trying comedy and no hate for actors I can think
of. It's almost as if you've expended all your hate elsewhere this week.
Every once in a while, he used to show up in movies and now it's only random TV episodes. James LaGrosse is still apparently in the professional world of acting and he's still not good.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah,
I know who it is. I can't picture him.
He turns up on shows every once in a while and I go, God damn it, why are you still getting work? And no, he hasn't fully faded yet. So we're waiting for that role, James. You'll find it.
Kyle Volte says, "Hello, TV dudes. Jerry Seinfeld's series, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, is moving from Crackle to Netflix.
Yay.
Should we worry that the nature of streaming may lead to free agent-style system where content is juggled between providers?"
Oh, shit, that's happening now.
Yeah, I bet that's a thing.
I mean, I go looking for a show, and I'm like, this was here yesterday. And fortunately, I have like four different streaming networks, mm-hmm. so usually I can find it. But we desperately need, I know there's some websites that do like, is it streaming? But we need some up-to-the-minute type of app that says, I want to watch this. Where can I watch it for free?
The Roku search function is the closest I have. Can I stream it is not solid that I can find. I thought Booth at the End was a Hulu original, and I went back to try to rewatch that show, and it's now on Vimeo for pay.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think these things are already moving around. We think it's weird because they pick up Mindy Project or they extend Arrested Development, and so like, oh, Netflix save that. That's really free agency already. That just moved off NBC to Netflix or moved off CW to Netflix.
Well,
Friday Night Lights and Nashville. Yeah.
We had a scare related to Beach Cops.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were wrapping up Beach Cops, yes. And we were getting to the point where we were going to release the last couple episodes, and Grant's like, hey, just so you know, there's a thing popping up on Terriers that says this show's going off on, like, December. It was the week we were releasing our final episode.
December 1st, and we had December 3rd as our last day of our episode. It turns out we ran that all the way till like, December 22nd.
Yeah, but we had, I mean, we were working on, like, a Twitter campaign. We were going to try and, like that we were going to do something that Kyle had named the Netflix Knicks, which I still think is a great idea. The, you know, when you've ever been watching a show that drops in the middle of something and goes to their another streaming service or disappears.
Yeah.
And it was about to happen to a show that I was doing a podcast for. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
And so I think we are in that world. I don't know that there's anything to fix it, but I do think we've gotten there. But I do want to address one point you made, which is that comedians get in cars getting coffee, getting wider exposure is a good thing because that's a fun show.
Okay, one last question here. This one comes from Zach McLernan, who says, so I just finished reading Saga number 42, which you can get at Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Wink. And I have to say, it was the most heartbroken and shaken I have been by an arc finale, to the point where I may not ever read that issue again. Has an episode of TV been so powerful or affecting that you have debated to stop watching or just not watch that episode ever again? Side note, he also says he totally called it regarding It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Their fifth episode is titled Making Dennis Reynolds a Murderer.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
That hasn't come out yet.
So good. Instead of playing up the serial killer thing for almost two seasons now.
I can't wait for that. I'm trying to think. Is there a show that I've stopped watching or that I can't go back to a particular episode?
I can think of one from recent memory that we spoke about on this show.
Oh, yep.
I had not watched Walking Dead in years. I watched one episode of it and we're good.
It was interesting with The Walking Dead. I watched that episode. It's one of the most powerful and brutal, and I had a visceral, emotional response to it.
You? Agreed. The robot?
I didn't cry.
Oh, okay.
I'm not that kind. But I felt feelings, I guess, and I was like, I think I'm back into this. I can watch the rest of the show. I started watching. I can't do it anymore. I can't watch anything else of that show. I'm done with the world. I'm done with that show completely. So, yes, I thought that the show had reinvigorated it. I eventually found out, no, it killed it.
You know what? Now that I think about it, there was one, and this was early on after we'd had my daughter. She was still a baby, and my wife especially, but I also got into this place where we were watching CSI, just one of the shows we used to watch, CSI, mm-hmm. and they lean so heavily on the kid murder and the kid endangerment, I couldn't watch it anymore. I had to give up. And it was just so affecting that I couldn't enjoy the murder police anymore.
The Opie episode of Sons of Anarchy.
That's the other one I was going to mention.
Can't do that.
I watched that standing. I had glass in my hand about to sit back down on the couch and realize what was about to happen. It just stood there. Yeah.
The Lem episode of The Shield.
Oh, man.
I can't go back to that. I can't do the final episode of 6 Feet Under anymore. Hmm.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I got a couple of them that I'm like, that's too much. You know, too heavy.
What's funny is I poke fun at you for being a robot, but apparently I don't have human feelings because I can't think of anything really that I won't go back and watch.
I think most of the shows that have stopped for me like that, it's not because they did one Negan strike to the head that just killed the show for me. It's usually a death by a thousand cuts. They did a series of slightly wrong turns that lessened my interest until one just subtly broke the camel's back, and I went, you know what? Turns out I don't care about season 3 or whatever.
Oh, there is one of the shows. It's not necessarily a visceral thing, but How I Met Your Mother put me off that way with sort of partly because of how Barney was. Like, Barney was the goofy misogynist dude, and Neil Patrick Harris was playing him, which made it sort of a winning thing. He can get away with being such a douchebag, but they turned him into such a douchebag that it wasn't fun to watch anymore. And I've definitely seen that on sitcoms. Like, they'll sometimes take those hateful characters you love to hate and make them so hateful you just hate to hate them too.
Hey, so Will and Grace is coming back.
All right, just a quick bit of news this week. First of all, 2016 is drunk again, guys.
Oh boy.
Yep, throw your hats in the air, folks.
Yeah, it's we're calling it 2016 until it stops killing people.
So okay.
That's never going to happen, right? Everyone's going to live forever after when 2017 really gets here.
Let me ask, was this person older than 67?
Yeah, actually, this one is someone who's pretty old. Mary Tyler Moore has died.
Ah.
And I know what you're thinking, because it's what I was thinking. Mary Tyler Moore was still alive?
Well, it's one of those things where she dies and then you suddenly realize how everyone's like, I think about her every day. She's always been that one person. I'm like, you never mentioned this person.
Yeah, it's funny. I internalized a little bit, Grant, of your, you didn't care. I didn't post about Mary Tyler Moore because I'm like, you know what? I liked her, but this makes no impact on my life.
I had
life.
The same moment. Like, the age came up and I went, no, that's about when death happens.
Yeah, that's people die. Yeah, she was 80.
She was a powerful figure in television, revolutionizing a lot of things in comedy and in comedy for women.
Well, Mary Tyler Moore won 4 Emmys for the Mary Tyler Moore Show, which was the sitcom that launched the career of James L. Brooks, who you might remember as from a little show called The Simpsons, the show that we're running when we're all long dead.
Good that he went on to do something.
You know, there's going to be an episode of Futurama when they bring that back for another time. You know they will. And The Simpsons will be on in the background in the 31st century.
It's going to be an episode of Futurama, and The Simpsons have lived longer than them.
Yes.
It's going to be a futuristic show.
Bart's still 10. Yeah. But Mary Tyler Moore Show was a feminist show about a woman, a career woman, and it's...
She wore pants,
She
Randy.
Wore pants, for God's edgy. Sake. She
Can you
also,
imagine that was edgy?
Yeah, weird. I know.
When she got pregnant and Dan Quayle got all pissed?
That's a different woman.
Wait, that's Murphy Brown.
That's a different woman.
That's Murphy Brown.
But she was a legend in TV, and it's sad that she has passed, even though 80 is when people die.
Yeah.
That's the Logan's Run flashing moment. That's
the phone calls. Great, your coldness is wearing off on me. There is an article on Slash Film, and no, this is not one of Randy's patented rants about the terrible writing of websites.
No.
Called One of the Best Things I Saw at Sundance 2017 Was a TV Pilot. So that's kind of surprising. It is a pilot called When the Streetlights Go On, and it is...
You know that's a Hulu original.
Is it really?
Yes.
Of course it is. Well, that ties in what we're talking about.
That's the... Yeah.
It is directed by Brett Morgan, who did The Kid Stays in the Picture in Chicago 10. I've never seen either of those movies, but I'm familiar with the former one at least.
Yeah.
It looks like it's got Max Burkholder, who was Max Braverman on Parenthood. And it also has Odessa Young, Adam Long, Ben Winchell, Kelly Mayo, and Graham Beckel, and I don't know who any of those people are.
I don't know a single one of them. All I've heard about it is that it's kind of a Stand By Me-ish coming-of-age story with a murder, kids murder in a small town.
Yeah. And we'll see what happens. It features nudity, swearing, and drug use. So it looks like after that it got picked up by Hulu.
Yes, and it is, I believe, part of a 2-show deal that Hulu made with the same production company, Anonymous Content, to also do one called Citizen. That's a supernatural hero origin story set in L.A.
Okay.
Also very on Hulu. Cool. Along with every other show, apparently.
I just thought when he wrote about When the Streetlights Go On, that's one to kind of keep on your radar.
Yeah.
If it was that impressive.
For sure. Yeah. No, I didn't actually. I hadn't actually scanned the article or anything. I just usually, when I mention where something is from, it's because I want to shit on them. I wanted to warn people that wasn't coming.
Yeah.
Fox has ordered Ridley Scott's vampire series, The Passage, to pilot. Now, I assume he is mostly sort of producing. He is executive producer. As well as Worf, the Planet of the Apes Helmer, Matt Reeves is involved. And it is former Friday Night Lights writer-producer Liz Heldens is going to write the script. And Matt Reeves is going to direct.
Did Matt Reeves do... He did Let Me In, right?
I believe that is correct. It just says Worf, the Planet of the Apes here, but I think you're right.
Oh, yeah. The Passage, what is this one about?
So, it's based on a trilogy of novels. It's based on a vampire outbreak, so it sounds similar to The Strain, but...
Is there milk?
There,
is there
going to
be a lot
milk.
Of milk involved?
It says the Strain's... The Passage's vampire virus is created by an error in scientific research instead of by an ancient master being deciding to purposely obliterate humanity. And it also draws comparisons to The Stand, in which a military-created super flu escapes containment. So it sounds maybe like a little apocalyptic.
Like Helix Makes Vampires?
Yeah, Helix Makes Vampires. So I don't know. I know nothing about the passage. Never read it. Ridley Scott has been not so great.
Not entirely late. Trustworthy.
Is name. Helix still on?
Yeah.
Really? Is it?
No. Helix is dead. Yeah.
Surely that ended. I stopped watching
but
it.
But I feel like it did
ended.
Two or three seasons.
I think it did. I know it did two, and I didn't watch the second one.
Really? I didn't even know it made a second season.
Yeah. I could be wrong, but I'm sure they made a second one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a second season of that.
All right. Finally.
It's like the Black Goo from X-Files got its own spinoff show.
That was Ronald Moore. I was kind of excited about that show, and then I never wound up watching it. NBC has ordered a gender-swapped What About Bob reboot. You guys seen What About Bob?
Oh, yeah.
It's so good.
I love What About Bob.
Baby steps.
There was a great story that came out, and it's referenced in this article on Slash Film, on HitFix, I think, and there was like a 30th anniversary of What About Bob, about how much Bill Murray and
Richard Dreyfuss
hated each other on that movie.
Really?
Or at least Dreyfuss hated him. Described as a terribly unpleasant experience. And that sort of worked. Murray said that Dreyfuss drove him nuts. Like, the two of them were not getting along, which sort of fits into the energy. But the article was all about sort of how this movie shouldn't work. Like Bob, you should hate this character. But because he's played by Bill Murray, you like it. So to take a premise that is sort of dangerously easy to fuck up and do it on TV, I feel like they're just really taking a chance here. But apparently it's going to star Rebel Wilson and Anne Hathaway?
No. Unlike the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels
okay.
remake starring Rebel Wilson and Anne Hathaway.
Oh, okay, that
makes more sense. By the way, they should not remake Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, even with Rebel Wilson or Anne Hathaway.
See, I could see them in a What About Bob a lot more than Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
I misread this piece. I thought they were going to be What About Bob.
Oh, yeah, no, Rebel Wilson tied to the mast of a sailing ship.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, that... While Anne Hathaway drops her kid into a lake, it'd just be great. Yeah,
yeah, that I could see. Instead, we don't know who's playing them, I guess.
But you're right, that is so casting dependent.
It's writers and executive producers Joe Port and Joe Wiseman, who wrote on Dilbert and the IT Crowd. Solid
Half
enough.
Of that
but,
helps.
But yeah. that's not a there's not a transfer of skills there to What About Bob?
No.
At all.
No, the IT Crowd's humor isn't even a transfer.
So I don't know. This seems like a really potentially terrible idea. It's really going to depend on casting.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to watch that burn down.
But I was super excited if it was Rebel Wilson and Anne Hathaway because that's perfect casting for it. And I don't want them making Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. So cancel Dirty Rotten Scoundrels movie.
Yes.
Put them on the What About Bob TV remake, even though neither of them is going to do TV again. And make that happen. So ordered.
Okay, we're on it. Talking about those three shows, we're going to be talking about The Path, and then we're going to follow that up with Shut Eye before concluding with Chance. But before we get into all of that, Hulu apparently has a ton of original programming. Do you guys know this?
Yeah, so I got Hulu because I was cutting the cord, and I'm like, okay, well, I want to have some network shows, even though I don't watch that much network. And then after a really shitty development season like the year before, I was like, I can probably just get rid of Hulu, right? I'm like, I'm not going to watch that much network show. And then the networks put a bunch of shows I wanted to watch, and then Hulu started putting out original content.
Yeah, I picked up Hulu for the same reason I had cut the cord, and I wanted some day after. Actually, specifically, I wanted CW shows.
Yeah.
So all my superhero shows were on Hulu for a year or two there, and of course, then when CW launched their own free streaming app, I very, very seriously considered dropping Hulu.
Me too.
And I was shocked that I actually ended up watching a lot of Hulu's original content.
Yeah.
I was shocked to hear that you did, too.
Well, and there's a ton of good stuff, because I had sort of written them off. I mean, the early stuff they were doing was kind of...
They did a decent job of curating other people's shows, but they weren't so much original shows. They were just picking and choosing decent British shows to bring over.
Yeah, they grabbed a lot of British shows, like The Wrong Man's...
Wrong Man's Spy... I think they also picked up Misfits, didn't they?
Yeah, they were the home for Misfits for quite a while, and still are. Which I don't know if you guys have seen that much Misfits.
It's in the first three seasons.
That's a great show.
Wow, you've seen way more than me. I've seen like the first three episodes.
Oh no, that's a great show. You should.
I need to catch up on it. I'll put it on my list.
Yeah. But so what else they got? You have a whole list there,
yes,
right?
So I started making a list of what all is on Hulu, because just in prepping for this episode, I realized that there were Harlots and Future Man coming out on Hulu that I had literally not heard anything, not even heard the names of them and their things that are happening. So I looked up a list.
Deep breath.
The Path, Deadbeat, Shut-Eye, Harlots, Casual, Chance, 11-22-63, which is just a miniseries event. Handmaid's Tale, Difficult People, Mindy Project, East Los High, The Awesomes, Hot Wives of Orlando, Quick Draw, Day in the Life, Freakish, Doozers, Resident Advisors, Battleground, Up to Speed, Mother Up, Spoilers, Crow's Blood. I literally don't know what Crow's Blood is. Hulu doesn't list it when you look them up as a channel on their own service.
I feel like it's a tie to Fight Milk from It's Always Sunny. I could be wrong.
Yes, it's Crow's Milk. Wrong Man's Confession, Rocket Jump the Show, Behind the Mask, Raising the Bar, Thick of It, Future Man, coming up. Hard Sun, which is from the creator of Luther, so sold. When the Streetlights Go On, Citizen, Crushed, which has Regina Hall, Dawn, which is a prehistoric drama, that's going to come out in the next couple of years, Dimension 404, which is Rocket Jump, getting a sci-fi anthology show. They are going to let Josh Schwartz, who did Chuck, do Runaways, which is an adaptation of the Marvel comic, another comic adaptation, Postal, an adaptation of a novel series I haven't read called Throne of Glass. The show's going to be called Queen of Shadows. They're going to let the lady that wrote Twilight do something called The Rook. And then the Russo brothers are doing The Warriors. Yeah, that's it.
What the hell? Where are all these?
Yeah. It's gonna get to a point. I mean, we already know that Netflix is releasing at least one series every Friday.
It seems like it, yeah.
Usually more than one, but at least one.
How is this financially solvent?
I don't know. Because
they dropped their free end. Is this what did that?
There's so many people who won't watch everything, but as long as you're giving them something every month that they have to watch, they're going to keep paying that fee.
Man, that's just really impressive.
Well, they definitely have not thrown this money into their advertising algorithm that's choosing ads. Recently, a third of my Hulu ads are Spanish. I do not speak that language.
Oh, you don't have the ad free?
No, I don't pay for the ad free. So even having ads, though, they used to at least be in my native tongue.
You know why I started paying for ad free? Because I did the math and I was like, $50 a year is worth it to me to not have to watch the same ad 100 times in a week.
I will say I suddenly wanted to see the Bye Bye Man when the ad was presented to me in Spanish. It's a close enough to it's a Latin based language. It just immediately sounds a little spookier and it kind of gave the movie this whole odd vibe. I was immediately more creeped out.
Is this Guillermo del Toro? What's going on here?
I feel like they're advertising their model. It's not that they can't fix their algorithm. It's that the best way to sell ad-free experience on Hulu is that algorithm.
Yes, if you just show me the same Discover card ad 16 times in a 30-minute episode.
You're like, fuck it. I'm just going to get that card.
Yep. That's exactly... That might have been exactly what I said when I did it. Fuck it. I'm just going to get the ad-free.
Yeah. All right. So The Path just started its second season. Les, I believe you're the only one who's kept up to date with this.
Yeah,
so
I'm fully caught up on The Path.
Take it away.
Yeah, tell us what's going on here.
I really enjoyed that show. And let me preface this by saying that The Path has a season one where it really doesn't feel like anything happened.
All right, I'm sold.
I mean, I know that that's a terrible sell for the show. You're either kind of on board with the universe and watching this religion cult. It's... Meyer is the cult on the show is a very, very tiny organization. They have not filed to be a religion. They're not tax exempt. They've stayed just under the FBI's national radar for cults and things like that. Rockman Dunbar, who used to be in a little show called
Sons of Anarchy.
Terriers. That's the one I was thinking of.
Oh, yes.
He plays the FBI agent who is investigating them because they've literally just crossed this line into possibly being big enough to worry about. Mm-hmm. So there's actually camps everywhere, but you're focused on one in upstate New York, and it's got Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad. This is the first show he did after that. Hugh Dancy and Michelle Moynihan are in it too. It's an incredibly well acted show. It looks just professional, classy. Hulu really stepped up their production game on making this show. It looks gorgeous to me. The world feels legit and lived in and real. The episodes are structured well. And for me, they ride a really, really fine line of going between whether or not... I mean, the cult is definitely not real. Like, their beliefs are nuts. and it's crazy talk and it's a cult. But they lean just enough on almost unexplainable stuff every once in a while that you start to wonder,
is there something supernatural? Is there something
too? Yeah. The way that the season one finale ended, I full on thought that we've either moved into a supernatural show or they're going to really have to deal with this. And I kind of love the way they dealt with it leading at the start of season two, which there's two episodes up now, where they're still riding that line, but without kind of overstaying their welcome on that sweet spot. There's still a lot of moments of, well, yeah, you could write that off if you wanted to, but it's also not quite explainable. So I'm starting to get the feeling that the cult is bullshit. The larger Meyerism is an Amway scam, but the two or three hippies that started it might have actually seen something. and so you really kind of wonder this through the show. And Aaron Paul does not believe, but is getting dragged back in. They leave all the characters in a really nice tension spot almost every episode. It's just very, very well made.
How do you compare this to the Scientology movie that Paul Thomas Anderson made with what's his name?
This is a lot more forgiving. Philip Seymour Hoffman and Joaquin Phoenix, The Master. Yeah.
The Master.
This is a lot more forgiving. This is a lot less about, well, for one thing, The Master in the Path is a guy named Steve, because what you always want to do is make sure that your religion is prophesied to you by a guy named Steve.
Yep.
yes.
I mean, maybe Jesus was the Steve of the times. I don't know what that name was like then. But Steve just doesn't sound very authoritative to me. And he is very, very sick and down in Peru. And so nobody has direct access to Steve. And so that's where you start to get this disconnect of how much of this religion is bullshit, how much of the people on the ground really know about the hierarchy, especially when the higher kind of the management level is in a position of starting to shift from local people that run a soup kitchen to national organization on the news.
Okay.
So I feel like it's a lot more forgiving of the organization. It's less about the cult of personality at the top and more about people within the organization just trying to live normal, good lives. People who got into these things for good reasons and still just want to do charity work.
Is it playing off of like people's vulnerabilities and pain?
Very much so.
Okay.
Very much so. Aaron Paul's character is in the religion because of an event that happened to him and dealing with a grieving process and kind of finding this at the right time. And almost everybody has some addiction stories. The pilot episode opens with the vans of the cult pulling into a just tornado-wrecked trailer park. And they manage to beat FEMA there by 30 or 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time FEMA gets there, they've already distributed water and t-shirts and taken a bunch of people back to camp with them. And as far as everybody in the trailer park is concerned, they're the greatest.
Wow, interesting.
I think that's the moment where they first kind of come onto a government radar of like, who are these people that got to an accident site 30 minutes before actual help? And then what did they do that was help?
Mm-hmm.
We have no idea. But did they pass out water? What did they really do?
Interesting. Okay.
There's a lot of sinister back and forth of like, you know, an organization like this can't be good, but individual people are good and they're doing good things. And so you're constantly in the show trying to see where that line is of corruption.
Yeah. The skepticism of it. Did you see the movie The Invitation by chance?
The Invitation? Les?
Yeah.
Yes. Like, I don't feel like these folks are going to light a lamp at dinner.
Okay. Okay. Good to know. Man, that movie fucked me up. Oh, man.
Yeah, I was talking about that movie actually yesterday. So
it's just so painful. That is in a good way. It is a rough movie.
Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and move on to something a little bit more lighthearted. The show called Shut-Eye, which stars Mr. Burn Notice and
Jeffrey Donovan.
There's an actor just named like him.
Well, there's an actor named Michael Weston on Burn Notice.
Yeah,
Donovan. Their character's name on Burn Notice was Michael Weston. And yeah. I remember getting confused, and so I still think of Jeffrey Donovan. Is that his real name?
Jeffrey Donovan. Yeah,
I think of him as Michael Weston.
Well, you know, there is a dude named, I want to say, is it Michael Winslow? No, Michael Winslow's the guy.
Winslow's the police academy sign effect.
Yeah, it's Michael. It's very close to that name. And he was a consultant on Burn Notice because he was an ex-spy, and a lot of his stuff came from that. He used to hang out on the Warren Ellis forum.
Oh, that's weird.
And talk about it. That's what got me into the show in the first place. He would talk about the stuff in the same, basically the same voice that, Michael Weston used for his voiceovers, telling little stories, and it was always entertaining, and that's what put me on to Burn Notice.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So this show is put together by Leslie Bohem, who is, he's a writer and producer known for Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child.
Oh, okay.
Dante's Peak, and Daylight, the Stallone movie.
This is better than all three of those things.
Cool.
His previous TV credits include the miniseries Taken, not about Liam Neeson's daughter.
This is the Spielberg alien abduction.
Yes. And then Extant, a sci-fi that starred Halle Berry.
Astronaut's Baby.
And now he's doing Gypsy Con Men.
That's right. Astronaut Baby. Romani con men.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Don't use the pejorative, my friend.
Sorry, my bad. Romani con men. At any rate, I really liked this show. I thought this was fun. I've only seen, I think, five episodes, maybe four or five. And it's, I mean, Grant's not wrong to put it in that Burn Notice category. It is lighter and more fun, and the cons are kind of fun. And there's very much a soapy element to his marriage to... the woman who's playing his wife, Katie Strickland.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, it's K-A, large D, two small E's is how she spells Katie.
Oh, that hurts.
Yep, me too.
Blame her parents, maybe.
So
her agent couldn't stop
she
that?
She was in The Sixth Sense.
Okay.
She was on The Player. She was one of the main people on, you know, that Wesley Snipes show that was on for about a minute. Secrets and Lies, Private Practice. What's weird to me is I don't recognize from any of these things, but she looks so familiar. And I think it's because she looks kind of like the Six from Battlestar Galactica, the Trisha Helfer.
Yep.
She looks a lot like Trisha Helfer.
She does look a lot like Trisha Helfer.
And so I thought that's who it was for the longest time. But I like her. She's playing the sort of scheming wife.
And who plays the hypnotist?
The hypnotist who she's so having trouble. An affair with.
Yeah.
That is the lady from... Oh shit! What's that? Was a show with the douchebag dudes?
That narrows it down.
That doesn't help.
Entourage. She was in Entourage.
Yes, that's right.
Was she Sloane? Was she on?
Yeah, she was the girlfriend.
She was Sloane.
She's Sloane from Entourage. I knew her from somewhere. Yeah.
So she's good. I like all these characters, and they do. Angus Simpson, who plays Fonzo, their sort of Romani crime boss dude. I love that guy.
Yeah,
he's really interesting. I would watch a Fonzo show.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And see, I have not seen Jeffrey Donovan's turn on Fargo. I still think of him as Burn Notice and kind of light and fluff.
Not him. The Fonzo guy.
No, the Fonzo guy. But wasn't Donovan also?
Donovan was also on Fargo season two.
And Randy, you had told me that his turn was pretty great on that.
He's pretty great in that.
Because I still see him as Burn Notice, which I love Burn Notice, but you knew that there was kind of a floor to how deep you were going to get on an episode of Burn Notice. And despite Shut-Eye... aiming further than that, it doesn't knock it all the way out of the park.
It is like a good USA show.
Yes,
I mean that is love. It's not Mr. Robot level USA show.
Okay, I was like, what's a good USA show? No, Mr. Robot.
That's the only great USA show there is.
Okay.
But it's a white collar level. Yeah,
white collar Burn Notice. I mean, it's solid. It is doing sort of morally gray in that. Yeah, but the good guys are still the good guys' way.
I felt like the ending of the season wrapped up in a maybe not the best Sons of Anarchy season wraps, but one of their middle of the road. Like, this is not as clever. This is not as clever as you guys think it is, but you almost hit it.
Yeah. Well, there's also, we didn't mention, by the way, Isabella Rossellini is in this, playing sort of the matriarch of the Romani clan, and David Zayas, who you'd know from Dexter, Angel on Dexter,
and Oz,
is playing this sort of crime boss who's being conned.
Incredibly friendly. He really is a fun character.
That's great casting, because he's scary when he gets scary. But
Sonia Sahn is in this.
Yeah,
and I saw her in the second episode. Was fucking terrible. It was such a bad performance. Did you?
Who is that?
Kima from The Wire.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Oh, she was bad here.
Yeah, it is weird.
Every line she delivered, I was like cringing. Yes. I was like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
You're a Wire alum.
Yeah. Wire alums don't always. You know. Although there's a Wire alum in Chance as well.
Here's what I want to say about this.
Yeah.
The first episode, the writing is super sloppy. And there's one big thing that you guys didn't mention. This guy is a psychic who ends up getting a bad concussion, and suddenly he actually might have legitimate psychic powers. He seems to be hearing things before people say them.
Yeah, this is my least favorite episode, part of the show, which is why I didn't mention it. The whole fake psychic thing where
you shouldn't do it.
He gets a head wound, and then all of a sudden he's like seeing visions, and they're like, oh, maybe I am a clairvoyant and not just a con man. And that whole thing, every time they do it, I hate it. I hate it so much. I like everything else around it, but I hate that
They
part.
Never lean into it enough to make it really work. But they lean into it too much for it to go away.
Yeah. Okay, good. Because I was like, they hint at that, but why aren't they? They don't seem to like embrace it. At least in the first two episodes,
he literally hears things before, like a couple times in a legitimately psychic fashion, where it's before the other person said it, and then they do it, or it really does pay off. And I hated it. I hated that part of it because either don't make it realistic, where I'm sitting here going, "Am I in a sci-fi show?"
Yeah.
I mean, and he has hallucinations that seem to be another element of clairvoyance, like the liquefying donuts being an allusion to the guy getting killed later on.
I think the thing is, I think what we're supposed to be getting out of this is the notion of his senses being he's aware as a con man, like he's constantly sort of thinking ahead and reading people and that kind of thing, and so his subconscious is picking up on things that he's not consciously picking up on. And so it's not that he's getting flashed to the future. It's that his subconscious is telling him, this is going to happen.
You're being very forgiving.
Yes. I'm being very forgiving. Because this is the only way I
would have loved
it
if they had hint, if they had really done that. But I don't feel like that's what they were. I don't think they were meaning to do that.
I choose to believe that the Kenny get hit in the head and have psychic powers was a network note. They're like, I guess so.
Yeah, because they keep toying with this twist that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. Yeah. I wasn't intrigued by the first two episodes. I thought that in the first episode they did a lot of telling, not showing, in like a very heavy-handed way. Like, hey, person that I have known forever, could you just give a lot of exposition dialogue here? I was like, ugh. And then the big twist with his wife sleeping with a hypnotist.
Yeah.
And it just seemed out of the blue nudity for the sake of it. I don't know. I'm like, what?
Listen.
Where'd that come from?
I am never going to complain about out of the blue nudity.
Oh, I am. I'm going to complain about it every time. if it's unnecessary to plot, I don't need it. It's just weird. It just seemed like Hulu was trying to be edgy all of a sudden.
The thing is, I like this show for what it is, but it definitely has serious flaws. But con men is a genre I like, and I think that's a big part of it. And I like Jeffrey Donovan.
I've seen eight seasons of Hustle. So this was fine.
Well, okay, let's move on to the last show since we don't all fully agree on that one. let's see how we agree on Chance. This is the new show from Dr. Gregory House.
Yes.
And
otherwise known as Hugh Laurie,
and he is a doctor who helps, I guess, a neuroscientist,
and like an abnormal psychologist, psychiatrist because he can prescribe drugs.
He directs people that have been through trauma to the appropriate resource for them, basically. So he's just kind of like a middleman doctor.
By the way, do you guys want to know how I know the difference between psychologist and psychiatrist?
How?
Fraser Crane on Cheers.
Okay.
I just want to get that Cheers. I feel like if I haven't talked about Cheers, it's not a TV Dudes episode.
That's probably a fair point.
So he kind of falls into a situation where one of his clients has multiple personalities and she seems to be abused by her cop husband.
Also, she's played by
Gretchen Mol.
Gretchen Mol, so she's gorgeous, which might tell you a little bit about why he gets involved.
Mm-hmm. Rounders and Betty Page movie. Yeah.
And Boardwalk Empire.
But this is straight up noir, and I didn't realize that when I first went to watch it. This is a noir where instead of a private detective, it's it's kind of like Double Indemnity. It's a guy who gets involved in this stuff. He's not a detective. He just has detective-like skills.
This was a completely different show than I thought I was sitting down to watch, and so much more up my alley than the show I thought I was sitting down to watch.
So what did you guys think it was going
to
be?
I actually tried this show when it first came out, because I was trying to, for TV Dudes, I was going to watch an episode, and I got, I guess, 15 minutes in, and I was like, this is not for me. Because the first 15 minutes are all Hugh Laurie, Eldon Chance is the character's name, going over these strange events that have happened to his patients. It's always like, you know, they got beaten in the street or they, you know, so they killed someone, and like, it's awful and relentless. And I thought, okay, this is going to be a show about a psychiatrist. I thought it'd be like in treatment. I thought it'd be like a bunch of people talking to him about their damaged lives. And I was like, I don't want to watch this.
I thought it was going to be a House knockoff. Yeah. I wasn't really sure why Hugh Laurie was doing another show and a single name doctor thing. The ads really, I'm sure that this was the marketing department trying to play up the House connection, but the marketing to me really made it seem like it was going to be some kind of case of the week, only instead of a physical doctor, now he's coming up with brain stuff, you know, psychiatry things.
Does his name chance, like, allude to something later on? Like, not, is there an element of chance in this?
Not really. Well, people make fun of it, but it's,
No, well, what I would say is that this is an entire show about second-guessing yourself and second-guessing your motives.
Yeah.
And whether you can trust...
what you're saying.
Well, whether you trust yourself. Are you being led by the nose? Is this a blind spot you know you have that you're overlooking? Ethan Suplee's character calls it the... thin ice or middle of the lake.
I forgot
how he phrases it exactly, but that you don't see it. That you know you have a thing you're chasing after,
the frozen lake,
chase it to the center of a frozen lake, and all your friends can see that that's thin ice, and you'll fall in, but you don't see it. And I feel like the whole show is about you have the option to ask this guy to. He has the option to tell a friend about this thing, and then they have the option to go do something about it. And he keeps making these choices. So I kind of feel like chance is it's a show about agonizing over decisions.
Here's something interesting about the creator. His name is Kem Nunn. He wrote a novel, Chance, that this is based on. So this is based on his novel. He is listed as co-creator on 10 episodes of John from Cincinnati. So he was clearly in the writer's room for that one.
Ah.
He also wrote 7 episodes of Sons of Anarchy. and that's, I think, kind of interesting. He also wrote for
Deadwood. One might write this off right away.
Yeah. But it's... He also wrote for Deadwood, though. So I think
that's
he's
how he
a guy
ended up with
who,
John from Cincinnati.
I think he's a guy who likes psychological, you know, nuance and that kind of thing. But the thing that got me here is, like, the interaction between Hugh Laurie's character, Ethan Suplee, who is this
just
guy
walks
I was
away with the show.
Doofus
he's the brother from My Name Is Earl.
From My Name Is Earl. And I like Ethan Suplee, but this is what made me realize, oh, you know what? This guy might have turned into a pretty good actor, because he plays this sort of burnt out, dangerous guy named D.
Do you not? I mean, he was really good in My Name Is My Name Is Earl.
He was good as a comedic actor.
American History X and Butterfly.
He's really great in a lot of things.
I forget that he has dramatic chops. I totally forget that.
He needs to get more opportunity. Willard, he'd lost some weight, but now he looks like Ethan Suplee again. I'm sorry he's gained his weight back, if that's a health issue, but now he looks like himself.
Yeah, he does. You're right. He walks away with it, because Hugh Laurie's great, and I like Hugh Laurie, but. The last thing I saw Hugh Laurie in was Night Manager, where he played this sort of psychopathic bad guy, and he was great in it. And this is a much more restrained part.
He seems terrified and being dragged through this plot that he's causing, but refusing to admit that he's causing.
Yeah.
I found him boring. Found him boring. I found the mystery itself boring. The only thing that I find, like, truly intriguing is D.
Oh.
I think he is, like, every time he's on screen, he's so magnetic that in contrast, it's just like, what are you doing? You shouldn't be messing with a situation. You know you're sick. And I don't really care, I guess, for Eldon Chance's plot. I thought that the whole first episode had to have that car crash at the beginning, brutal car crash.
Yeah.
Because the rest of it, we're going to be sitting through a very still episode up until D goes and assaults someone at the end.
The first episode is definitely a bit of a slog, to be honest.
I watched the first episode, and I want to say there was a week or so before I watched the second one, because I knew I liked the world. I liked how it looked. I liked being in that place with those characters. Like I was kind of grooving to how all the pieces were moving, but I wasn't hooked yet on seeing where it all went. every single time Ethan Suplee was on screen, you're right, he's just white hot. Like, yeah. He makes the show when everything else is boring.
Yeah. Well, the thing is,
he's the lit match in the room.
I became very interested in Gretchen Mol's character and what the Hoarder deal was and what was going on and what was a lie. And that's very noir, the femme fatale who turns out to be more of the danger to the lead and that kind of thing. I thought that was really interesting. But yeah, the best part is the reveal we get about Dee.
Yeah,
and that his story, I'm like, oh man, there's a whole thing going on here I didn't even see.
This big silent guy that does this insanely intricate brass work, yeah. and all this antique work, but then is also, he is that crazy live in the woods study.
Yeah.
Everyone's actions assault manuals. Always know how to exit a room.
Well, yeah. At one point, he says everyone should be homeless for a month.
Yeah, he's that guy that should be full of shit.
Yeah,
but he isn't.
Yeah,
and he's terrifying.
Yeah.
But the more I didn't watch the second episode immediately right away, but I found myself for a week still thinking about the world and who these people were.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back and made myself get through the second one. And I think it's in the third one, it really clicked that I was not watching a Hugh Laurie show about him being a doctor again, regardless of who was cast in this. I was watching a Sam Spade trope turn sideways this was the dame that he shouldn't get involved in that walked into his office with legs that go all the way to the floor. And even where the show ends, some of it resolves, some of it doesn't.
Yeah.
Things that they can't know, they just don't know.
Yeah.
And it kind of leaves it similar to how Jessica Jones is at the end of sitting there at the desk with his new, I guess, partner, only they're not in business. They're not detectives. Yeah. It's Chinatown. He just got dragged into this shit.
Yeah. The other thing I really like about this, it's as it goes on, it gets more and more engaging. Like the cliffhanger started drawing me in and I couldn't stop watching. I'd have to like one more episode. And that I think is the mark of a good story. It's very serialized. There's not a case of the week that goes on. The little bits of like, you know, he's helping out in a court case with a guy who's a psychiatrist who's gone a little crazy is actually supposed to be a reflection of what's going on with him. Like it all ties into the main story. And so I like a story that's basically one big serialized story, which is what this is. It reminds me a little bit of what I like out of Ed Brubaker's comics and Gillian Flynn's novels.
I haven't read Gillian, Gone Girl.
Gone Girl.
Right, yeah.
And Dark Places. No,
it's definitely Ed Brubaker. It has that kind of noir, crime noir.
And I'm a noir guy, and so I'm so glad I gave this a second look.
I'm not necessarily a noir guy, but I was rooting for D to show superpowers. Because I am a superpower guy.
Spoiler, D does not show superpowers.
Ah, I think I'm fully out
He
there.
Just gets, I love that. I love
yeah.
the character.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, for me, I thought this one was the most interesting. I might finish it. I wasn't feeling the other ones, but it seems like you guys are pretty on board for what Hulu's putting out there.
This is the first Hulu show, other than Casual, which I also really like. This is the first one I'm like, oh, this is worth the cost of Hulu.
Yeah.
This is the thing that would make me watch it. And I still think Netflix is still the king in original content. They had a huge leg up on everybody else, and they're putting out just a ton of great stuff. But just like Amazon finally landed for me with Sneaky Pete, this is the one that put Hulu on the map for me of sort of a... Because when I was watching Casual, I was always like, well, maybe I'll drop Hulu, and then I'll just buy it once a year and binge Casual. That's how much I was interested in it. This is like, nope, Hulu's put up a couple shows. I now want to have the network.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Shut Eye a lot more than I thought I would. The Path, I think, was the first class act. This feels like prestige television thing that they produced for me. And then Chance hit that same... I would watch Chance. So having two of them on there, I really like it. Casual, I did not find as funny as everybody else, but Casual is a Hulu show as well. I friggin' hate Difficult People.
I also hate Difficult
People.
I hate
that show. but I can't wait for Handmaid's Tale, and Harlots coming up is... looks like Downton Whorehouse. I'm sold.
Keep your eyes peeled for that one, folks. But we're going to go ahead and call it there. Randy, Les, thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Grant.
Thank you, listeners. And hey, stay tuned, patrons, because we're going to be having another interesting conversation coming up soon. And until next week,
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.